TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning if you're in the UK. Good afternoon, good evening if you live elsewhere. It is Monday, the 6th of February, 2023. My name's James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio. Right, we've just had Nick Hudson on the line from Panda. We had a fascinating conversation because one of the things that's pondered on my mind over the last couple of years is how people in power that must see what's going on because they're a clever people, they have all of the information, and they're seeing what's actually going on, which a few of us the more clued up also know what's going on, and they're also then aware of what governments are telling the public. And I've often pondered on how do they get caught up in all this, and why do they go along with it? Because the argument that they're being bought off only goes so far, because you can't buy off all of these officials. And what Nick was kind of talking about is the actual mechanisms and the ideas and philosophies which have been used to convince these people that what they're doing is right. So if you missed the show, I would definitely recommend listening back tomorrow once it's uploaded to the TNT Radio website. Just go to tntradio.live, go on to shows, find my show, and it will be there waiting for you. Right, now, next up, I have Angus Dogleish. So Angus is a professor of oncology at St George's University of London. He is best known for his contribution to HIV/AIDS research, and in particular, he identified the CD4 receptor as related to HIV in humans. Now, I've got no idea what that is, but I will be asking Angus to explain it to me. Right, we'll be talking about lots of things, but in particular, I want to talk about an article that Angus wrote last week in the Daily Express. Now, that article has gone viral on Twitter, and even Elon Musk has commented on it, saying just one word, wow. So, yeah, we'll be talking about that and many other things with Angus. Right, now, before we go over to Dee Dee Denslow for one of the big headlines of the day, I just want to talk about some of the new stories we were told about where the virus originated, because I talked about this a little bit with Nick just a moment ago, but it really is absolutely bonkers when you start looking back at some of the news stories that were circulating back in early 2020. And one of those stories that amused me over the weekend when I was doing a bit of a research was this story from the BBC, and it was titled "Smuggled pangolins have been found to carry viruses closely related to the one sweeping the world." Now, they go on to say scientists say that the sale of the animals in wildlife markets should be strictly prohibited to minimize the risk of future outbreaks. Now, that assumes they're making a big assumption there that pangolins were responsible for the outbreak. They don't know that, by the way. So, you know, that's a little hint that maybe this is just a bit of propaganda. And they go on to say that pangolins are the most commonly illegally trafficked mammal used both as food and in traditional medicine. And they also say that in research published in the journal Nature, researchers say handling of these animals requires caution. And they say further surveillance of wild pangolins is needed to understand their role in the risk of future transmission to humans. Now, I don't know about you, but I remember calling out this BS at the time. First of all, it was bats, then pangolins, and I even recall full-page spreads giving lots of details about these little animals. Now, if you're like me and you can sniff out propaganda, then you know there's many techniques to lying. You can also mix up those techniques to create a sophisticated web of lies. Now, they do say in the article, now the interesting thing is when you read these articles of propaganda, quite often there is a line in there which gives the game away. So quite early in the article, they say that their role as an intermediate host of the SARS-2 COVID outbreak remains to be confirmed. So they actually say, we don't know that it's related to that. But anyway, we're still going to run a 2-page spread on these deadly little animals that are causing the world's pandemic at the moment. So, you know, the whole bats thing and the pangolins narrative was misdirection. That's what it was. You know, I think it's just beyond belief that there was a lab down the few miles down the road from the wet market that was actually being used to study coronaviruses. Now, when I had Nick on before, he was saying actually the important thing is not to focus on the origin of the virus, but to focus on the origin of the pandemic narrative. Now, I think both things are actually important. I see where Nick's coming from, and I do think it's very, very important that we understand where the narrative came from, because it is a political narrative. However, I would actually like to know where this virus came from. Now, in the UK, we know now that government officials admitted that it was very, very likely that it came from a lab, and they were saying this in private. But when it came to talking in public, they went on to suppress the story as misinformation. Now, looking back at this period is really interesting because it really does shine a light on the utter ridiculousness of the mainstream media and the utter garbage that they shove down the public's throat. Personally, I cannot listen or watch mainstream news now for more than 5 minutes without turning it off in contempt. Because once you understand all of the techniques they use to lie to you, you cannot unsee it. And amen to the fact that we now have this new thing called new media, which TNT radio is very much a part of. Right, now, did you know that there are many ways you can listen to TNT radio? You can stream us direct from our website, on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or you can download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. So now you've got no excuse not to listen to all of your favorite shows on TNT radio. Right, now stick with me, because after this quick jingle, we'll be joined by Dee Dee Denslow for one of the big stories of the day. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
The latest news to your smart speaker.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, Darren, the West blocked Russia-Ukraine peace process, I should say. What's that about?
This is coming from former Israeli PM Bennett. Both Moscow and Kiev appear to have been ready for a ceasefire. And the Fatali, Bennett says peace might have been agreed between Russia and Ukraine shortly after the start of the conflict. But Kiev's Western backers, that would be us, blocked the negotiations between the two neighbors. Former Israeli minister Naftali Bennett has said, Bennett, who gave an almost 5-hour long interview to Israeli's Channel 12 on Saturday, claimed that his efforts as a middleman came close to succeeding, as both Moscow and Kiev appeared to be ready to make concessions and agree a truce. It didn't happen because I think there was a legitimate decision by the West to keep striking Putin. I mean, the more aggressive approach, he said. When asked by the host if the US and its allies blocked the peace process between Moscow and Kiev, the former PM replied, basically, yes, they blocked it. I claim there was a good chance of reaching a ceasefire, but I'm not claiming it was the right thing to do. So ceasefires are bad. According to Bennett, his mediation was coordinated down to the last detail with the US, France, and Germany after the conflict broke out in February. There was no unified approach on how to deal with it among Western leaders. Johnson of the UK adopted the aggressive line,
whereas Scholz and Macron were more pragmatic, and Biden was a bit of both. Of course, Biden doesn't know where he is. Some 17 and 18 drafts of the peace deal between Moscow and Kiev have been prepared. With his involvement, the former PM said, Bennett claimed that, among other things, he managed to secure a pledge from Putin that he was not going to kill Zelensky, something that we've seen floating around on social media, James, who has feared for his life. The Russian leader was also ready to retract his demand for the demilitarization of Ukraine, while Zelensky promised to give up his aspirations to join NATO. So there was a peace deal in the offing. This was back in April the 1st, 2022, April Fool's Day. But it seems like our people in the West weren't keen on peace. They were keen on an aggressive approach and finding peace at the end of a bomb, James.
Yeah, this is actually not a new story. I've heard this circulating, a little bit of a variation on that. But apparently, Boris Johnson, in one of his sort of off-the-cuff trips out to Ukraine, was actually to stop the peace process going ahead. I read that, I think, some point in the last couple of months. Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the West want war with Russia, whilst the more sensible of those around us want peace. Julia Assange, I think, had something to say about this when it came to Afghanistan. And I think that probably applies here as well. He actually said, regarding the Afghanistan conflict, that the West doesn't want a quick war. It actually wants an endless war so that it can launder money from through Afghanistan back to Western interests. And isn't it interesting that at the moment that seems to be, well, I don't know whether that thing's happening, but it certainly seems to be that all Western countries are sending lots of money and lots of weapons into Ukraine. So I think there are parallels. How many times can you say, Darren, that I think peace is the answer here, because we're talking about nuclear armed countries? It makes no sense at all to me why the West want to provoke Russia. I don't know what else to say about this, Darren. What are your thoughts?
But going back to Boris Johnson, I think he has been on two occasions he went over to block peace talks or to prevent a peaceful resolution to the conflict. He's been over again recently as the Prime Minister of the UK. Exactly what he wanted and why he was over in Ukraine then, I don't know. He's in some sort of ambassadorial role. But yeah, no one in the public has voted for a war. Nobody in the public wants a war, apart from those that have been truly propagandized and haven't woken up yet. And yet our establishment seem dead set on having a forever war, as you described it, James. Something that comes straight out of the pages of 1984 with the never-ending wars of Eurasia and the other sort of fictional countries in his book. So, yeah, it looks like peace is not something that we want in the West, James.
No, it's certainly not. And I, you know, it makes me laugh, all of these people with the Ukraine flag in their bios on Twitter and whatnot. Now, it's not to say that I don't feel for the Ukrainian people, because actually I think they're the victims in this. They're caught between this proxy war between America and Russia. So I do feel sorry for them. But what they don't realize is, you know, they're just being fed a whole load of BS about, not just about this war, but about lots of wars over the last 30 years led by America and NATO. You know, the classic one is Iraq with the WMDs that never existed. We also know about what went on in Libya now. It just shocks me, Darren, the level and the number of people that actually buy the Western narrative on all of this. Now, I'm not saying that Putin's the good guy either. That's not what I'm saying, before you all start jumping on Twitter and accusing me of being, well, I'm sure you won't do that, but certainly if I go on Twitter and talk about these things, people will come back and say you're a Putin, you're a Putin supporter, which is absolute load of nonsense. I don't support Russia. I don't support the US. I support peace. End of. Right, Darren, thank you very much for that. You're back at one today, are you?
I'm not on at 1 o'clock today. I'm not sure what's happening with the rest of the week. But I'm probably likely to be back on there very, very, very soon, James. So, yeah, just stay with TNT. My voice is never far away.
Excellent. And you'll be back with me tomorrow, won't you, Darren?
Yeah, I'll be back with you tomorrow, James. See you then.
Excellent. Have a great rest of the day. Right. Okay. So don't go anywhere, because after this short break, I will have Angus Dogleash on the line with me.
TNT Radio's Mike Ryan.
The Antarctic has not warmed at all in 7 decades, and that's destroying the UN hoax and global warming. Now, the Antarctic is the world's biggest desert and the driest continent. The climate campaign always claimed Antarctic glaciers were melting. They were not. 75 years ago or thereabouts, when Al Gore was born, there were only 13,000 glaciers in the world, and nowadays we have, believe it or not, 130,000 glaciers. We still have 130,000 glaciers. The oceans aren't rising. Every part of modern life will collapse as the use of hydrocarbon or fossils for power is dismantled. Net zero is the end of any modern society. This includes living in cities, agriculture, schools and universities, all manufacturing and all transportation.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts, or be their next door neighbors, or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
The vaccine was not brought in for COVID. COVID was brought in for the vaccine. Stop the jab and save lives. The COVID vaccine does not work. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Well, I feel in a very privileged position, because every day I get to ask the experts all of the burning questions that I have. And today I'm joined by Professor Angus Dogleash. So Angus is a professor of oncology at St. George's Hospital, St. George's University of London. Hello, Angus.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Listen, thank you so much for joining me on the line today. I've got loads of questions for you about the article that you wrote that went viral last week. But before we start, I wonder if you'd just introduce yourself, talk a little bit about all of the great work that you've been doing for many, many years now, and a little bit about why you're kind of speaking out at the moment.
Okay, well, I'm a professor of oncology for the last 30 years or so at the University of London. And on my way up, I did a lot of general medicine and had areas at times of focusing on immunology and virology. And I did my research after I qualified as a physician on HIV. It started off with the just human retroviruses, but I started in early 1984, and I was exposed to HIV, and I did a lot of work in that and got very interested in how it caused disease and the implications for designing vaccines. And thereafter, when I went into become a working oncologist, and luckily I had a laboratory, I basically used what I'd learned from how HIV interacts with the immune system to realize you could use the immune system to fight cancer. And I started a long-term cancer vaccine and immunotherapy program very early on. And at the same time, I noticed that some of the patients that we had who had significant side effect problems with HIV and cancer treatments benefited greatly from thalidomide when steroids no longer worked. So I was involved with the resurrection of thalidomide, working with colleagues at then a very small little spin out called Celgene, and that led to the development of lenalidomide, which is one of the most successful drugs in oncology for myeloma and lymphoma. And so the whole time I've been looking at the immune system for how you treat it with infectious diseases and how you use it with regard to cancer. And the reason I got very involved with COVID is that I had worked with my long-term collaborator, Birger Sørensen, and his colleagues at Immunor in Norway in order to improve the very successful HIV vaccine he had. And this really opened my eyes. Vax4X, which on a randomized study, is probably the most effective HIV vaccine going, but it's been completely ignored and refused funding by the NIH and the Gates Foundation, etc. But because of that work, as soon as COVID became an issue and the sequence was published, he called me up and said, look, we could make a very good vaccine for COVID here. There are two really important lessons. It has all these inserts in it, which could not arise naturally. And I was staggered that my scientific colleagues couldn't understand this because they just think sequences and sequences random mutations. You know, sequences make amino acids, which make proteins, and they have their own laws. And there are laws of charge and what is acceptable. And Berger and his team saw this. And I checked it out with papers, and I realized he was very likely to be correct on this, and started a lot of research, and I haven't changed my mind that he was spot on from day one. And the second thing is when you do have a new protein like the spike protein, you should do blast analysis on it. That basically means you do a sort of a mass read. Is it similar to anything else? Well, this protein, spike protein, was similar to 80% of human proteins, which meant, translated into English, it had a very high chance of inducing side effects. And that if you'd taken notice of this, you could have left these parts out and just focused on those which are unique to the virus and had virus control without the side effects. We pointed all this out to the scientific advisors, to the government, the government chief medical officer, everybody, all of whom decided not to listen to us. Apparently, I was dismissed as a pure oncologist. What would I know? Well, it seemed to be an awful lot more than what the advisors knew at the time. So we actually noted that in the sequences of the spike, that there were homologies, very strong homologies to a platelet factor, which would result in problems with platelets and clotting, and the other was a myelin, which would lead to myelitis Guillain-Barré, which, of course, was a major problem with the 1976 flu vaccine. So that's really where we were. So when we started to see the side effect issues, which I've seen in my own friends to the point where none of them want to have a booster again, and I began seeing issues in with my patients, I felt it basically a moral obligation to be the canary in the coal mine or to get out the red flags or red card and say, you know, we must stop this because we have a scientific basis for this now, especially with regards to the booster. When you give a booster, you're boosting an antibody response massively against a virus that no longer exists. This has two things. It basically deprives the immune system of its frontline defense for viruses that it hasn't seen, and that includes the Omicron and other viruses, etc. And it reduces the T cell response. Now, the important control of a coronavirus or any respiratory virus should be to boost the T cell response. And these vaccines that they did not do that enough in my book. So by the time you do the third, it actually pushes the T cell response, your normal innate immune response, even if it's been boosted transiently by the vaccine, down. And this is what's causing the problem. And other people have shown at the same time you get a class switch of antibody. So instead of boosting against the virus, you know, the immune system says, I've had enough of this. We'll dump the whole thing down and you start tolerizing it.
Yeah, now we'll need to take a quick break in a moment. But before we go, I wonder if you just kind of hypothesize with me a little bit. And what do you think the reasons are that you were ignored? Because, you know, you're an eminent professor. You've done leading research in the past. Why do you think that they didn't listen?
Be quite honest, I have no idea why they didn't listen, because, I mean, I was a senior to the people advising the government, and we had very good logic. And as one of the senior politicians who did support my case pointed out, that I have a terrible track record of being right when everybody else is wrong. and perhaps they ought to take notice of that. And I'll give you examples. I basically started a cancer vaccine and immunotherapy program at a time when I went for a grant support. I was turned down on the grounds that we've consulted the experts and they feel that control of cancer is an artifact, a phenomenon confined to mice and will never translate to the human condition. I mean, with regards to my HIV research, and this follows into a lot of people who raised a lot of issues, I said it's not the virus that causes AIDS, it's the immune response to the virus that causes AIDS. And therefore, if you're going to make a vaccine, you must actually use the least possible components of the vaccine possible. But oh no, and I've been at many meetings with Fauci, NIH, and all the big vaccine makers, etc., pointing out, do not use the whole envelope, because there's 3,000 epitopes on that envelope. It will just confuse the body and it will never work. And I was told I didn't know what I was talking about. And of course, every major envelope-based HIV vaccine failed, the last one being very recently in South Africa. And I remember Fauci at a meeting I was at boasting that we would have an HIV vaccine in 6 to 9 months. And that was in 1984. So I do have a track record of being
Oh, well, good on you. And I think we do need to get to the bottom of this question of why so many people that have turned out to be right were ignored. Now, I know Dr. Asim has got a view on this. He talks about this in terms of money versus truth. And I think there's a lot to that. Right, now we're going to take a quick break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back shortly.
Time to read some news. TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has revealed he tried brokering a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine in the first weeks of the war, but was repeatedly shot down by Washington. Iran's supreme leader has agreed to pardon tens of thousands of prisoners, including those convicted of their role in recent protests and riots. And Jupiter has overtaken Saturn as the planet with the most moons in our solar system.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Now I've got Angus Dogleish on the line with me. Angus is a professor of oncology and seems to be an expert on vaccines. Hello, Angus.
Hello again.
Right, Angus, last week you wrote an article in the Daily Express, didn't you? And I came across this on Twitter because it went absolutely viral. I think Jay Bhattachary retweeted it, and even Elon Musk replied to it with one word. He said, "Wow." Please, can you just tell us a little bit about the article, what it was about, and your thoughts on the whole topic?
Well, I was asked to write that article by Paul Baldwin, who is one of the leading editors of the Express, because he knew from all the correspondence and from other people in the field that we had spotted the fact that this virus could not possibly be a natural jump from a bat to a human, or even through an intermediary like a civet or a camel, because it had the hallmarks of insertions on it, which had previously been published by the Wuhan group, who put these inserts in and made these differences between an ordinary bat virus and what we're seeing now to make it more infectious for human cells. And this is no conspiracy theory. They published it. So it's actually out there in the literature. So you can actually see the hallmarks. And for them to basically deny that it had anything to do with it was beyond belief. And the big issue was that this virus was so supremely tuned for infecting human cells. This was a giveaway. This had all been done in the laboratory. And there's a thing called when you have a virus that starts to infect a cell line, or say a human cell line, you can just keep passaging it. They call it polishing, a bizarre word, but they call it polishing. So by the time you do it after a few weeks, it's even more adapted to that. So it can all be adapted perfectly in the laboratory. And it jumped out perfectly adapted, causing really much worse infection and infectiousness than you'd expect. So everybody, the experts, said, this is exactly the same as SARS-1 and MERS. You know, it was not at all, because both SARS and MERS, these infections required an intermediate. In the case of SARS, it was the civet animal. And in the case of MERS, it was the camel. And it takes a long time. The virus jumps back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It doesn't just make one big jump and infect. And by jumping back and forth, it leaves the presence. It leaves footprints. So a lot of people get infected and they don't know it until it adapts and it starts to be able to produce disease, and then it's recognized. And in both cases, MERS and SARS, you could go back to those populations and see that they'd been exposed to these viruses for months before any of them started to get ill. And the big difference with SARS-CoV-2, the COVID virus, was all this work had already been done by the time it jumped into a human. So it basically had already been adapted. And that was the big argument. And once you saw that, you could see that within the sequence of this virus are these inserts which affect the charge. Now, I'm really, really irritated speaking to molecular biology experts who go on, but these changes could just be random mutations. No, they cannot. Because if they are random, they're edited out. These were put in to make the virus latch on to the ACE receptor, which is the major receptor. And that's why it causes such cardiac problems, because the ACE receptor is all over the body, but particularly in high density in young adult hearts. And I don't need to go into reminding people about myocarditis, etc. But not only that, it was adapted by doing this, so over-adapted to one receptor, it started to be able to infect other receptors. And we pointed all this out in our paper on this, which every journal in the world turned down. Nature Science, Journal of Virology, Lancet, they all turned it down, saying within a day it got turned down. It said, we've got nothing against your science, but it's not in the public interest to publish this. What a load of lunacy. It was really in the point of public interest, because the bit about the extra receptors included the receptors that are present on taste and smell. I mean, they explained why this thing buggered up taste and smell. Nobody seemed to be interested. And yet we had to listen all the time to our politicians and our scientists say, we follow the science, follow the science. Probably the same as you heard from Fauci and all his cronies in America. There was no science that they were following because they were not looking at it. And I would just like to bring in something that I think is very important. Matt Ridley, who's a scientific reporter here in the UK, he set out to write a book on the history of how it jumped from bats to humans. And while researching, he came across Alicia Chan. They ended up collaborating, and they produced the book Viral by Chan and Ridley, which goes into unbelievable detail, looking at emails, searching all these sequences, putting them all together, and is terribly complimentary to a book I contributed to, just called The Origin of the Virus. And basically, this was another contributor was Stephen Key, who I'm sure your listeners will know very well. And at any rate, Matt Ridley told me that what was absolutely staggering, that in his researches, he went to the top, the fellows of the Royal Society, and basically said, you know, what is the evidence that it's really origin? The origin is natural. And the evidence it could have come from the laboratory, i.e. all the work that we and others, I wasn't the only one, who produced. And they said, oh, we haven't looked at it, words to that effect. There's no point. It's obviously a zoonosis. Now, when you get your bastion of scientific excellence, you can't be bothered to look at the evidence. You know, and I'm contributing to another book now that's going to be coming up called The Death of Science, because that's what it was. When the scientific establishment won't look at the facts, it has become a religious organization and not a scientific organization, in my book.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, what you're talking about there, Angus, I did read a few times last year about a sequence in the COVID virus that was actually patented by Moderna, I think about 3 years before. Now, I'm not an expert, so I don't know the validity of all these stories. But are you aware of that research that was published?
I am aware of it, and I haven't really had enough take on to make my mind up on it. But what I would say is it wouldn't surprise me that there seems to be an awful lot of work going on prior to this this outbreak. And, you know, I would point out another thing that they say to me, you know, I'm an oncologist, I don't understand all these, the virology and the sequences and things like that. But, you know, another thing that's on my CV that's not being picked up is that I was on a scientific advisory board for a messenger RNA company, calls itself the messenger RNA company, for over 5 years. So I am very aware of the issues of messenger RNA vaccines too. And I must say, I was not comfortable with the many issues that have to be addressed before you make a vaccine that goes into humans. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, and I think And there is a big question here, isn't there? And like I said before the break, Asim Malhotra puts this into context by talking about this is about truth versus money. And obviously, Dr. Asim has done an awful lot of work sort of looking at the corruption involved in medical research, medical funding, the universities. I mean, I think corruption's the best word for it, but you could also use the word capture by the pharmaceutical companies. What's your kind of experience? Do you have any view on this at all? I mean, do you agree with him?
I'm finding it very difficult not to agree with him. The more I read and the more I research, I've always, as a clinician doing clinical trials, been very suspicious of how trials are done and the way they're done. And the big watershed in my life, I was doing some very, I would say, very important, very good work with a number of different cancer vaccine approaches, including with dendritic cells. And we used dendritic cells in our academic laboratory They treated hundreds of patients. And then in 2004 comes down the line that we can't do any of this anymore because of the European Union Clinical Trials Directive. Now, I don't know, in America, you realize that basically it basically made it impossible to do academic trials unless you had big pharma back you. Even small companies found it, the costs went up through the roof, and people said, oh, this is nothing to do with harmonization and safety. It's to raise the wire so high, the bar so high, that no small company or academic can reach it. And at the time, I thought, oh, that's an extraordinary thing to do, just to do that. But as the years have rolled on, I begin to realize that is exactly what goes on, because I've been involved with many smaller companies who've got great products, got great early results, but they're just completely rolled over by a big pharma if they've got something that will do the same, that is going to be much more profitable. And they will do what they can just to push you to the side. And I'm afraid this is what it's all about. And so, looking at COVID, it's just basically, it's like for the pharma, the vaccines have become an addiction because they were so profitable to them. So now we hear stories that they're trying to mutate them to mutate disease. Well, actually, that's what Fauci was funding in the Wuhan. It's no different. They're just going to take it on into a big pharma commercial thing.
I mean, this is a huge question, isn't it? Because the thing with vaccines is the argument goes that you should give them to everybody in the population. So no wonder the pharmaceutical companies are interested in this. Right, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere, Angus, and we'll be straight back shortly.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
The issue of trans women being allowed to compete in sports with biological women is not going away anytime soon. Recently, World Athletics proposed continuing to allow transgender women to compete in female international track and field events. Among those who will be directly impacted by the policy is British shot putter Amelia Strickler, who says it would leave women at a serious disadvantage. She spoke with BBC Radio 5 Live and warned that this will be in elite athletics sooner than we think. Asked if she would accept the outcome of the World Athletics vote on the issue, which will be held in March, Strickler said, well, it's just something that me and my peers and my colleagues, we don't want to see this happen. BBC Sports noted support for Strickler's stance from British Olympic long jumper Chris Tomlinson, who tweeted, male athletes need to stand up for women before their sport is ruined. My question is, and has always been, where are the feminists? Where are the women's libbers who have now deserted women athletes in the name of woke garbage? Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Now, I've got Professor Angus Dogleish on the line with me, and we've been talking about many things. Corruption and truth versus money in the pharmaceutical industry is one of them. What I'd like to talk about now, Angus, is obviously, you know, there's big question marks about the advice that was given to the general public during the pandemic. But we do have regulators in the UK. The MHRA is one of them, and they regulate the licensing of new drugs and medicines. But also they are supposed to do the monitoring of the safety of those medicines when the general public start taking them. What's your view in terms of whether the MHRA has done its job properly?
Well, first of all, the monitoring of the side effects of the vaccine seems to, and what you do with the side effects that have been complained registered. In the UK, we have a yellow card system, and that yellow card system has already flagged that there is a problem long ago, but nothing, I believe, has been done. And a spokesman from the MHRA actually said, admitted that the problem with the yellow card system is that only one yellow card gets filed for every 10 incidences. I would put that closer to 1 in 100. So already they have enough yellow cards to basically say, stop and listen. This is what I was referring to in the article. In the 1976 flu outbreak in the Fort Dix in the US, which did require, I mean, a proper, whatever you could do, because it was affecting young people. I mean, with COVID, it's only been affecting older people. And with the young people, they did the vaccine program, and the physicians, probably someone like me, said, look, I'm seeing a couple of cases of Guillain-Barre in the last few months that you've rolled this out. I would normally only expect to see one every 10 years. Is there a problem? Somebody else said it. Somebody else. So they went in and they monitored it, and they monitored it, showing it went from 1.3 per 100,000, slowly rising up towards 9. They turned around and looked at the epidemic and realized it was no longer killing people and was attenuating and going away, so they stopped it. My whole point of my argument with regards to the MHRA is if they had been doing that job properly, they should have stopped the whole thing over a year ago, if not 18 months ago. And so that's where I'm coming from. I believe, I'm told the MHRA thought somebody else was doing it, and the government, because the whole program was taken over by the government out of the MHRA hands. And unfortunately, that seems to be quite a bit of a cop-out. And the other thing with the MHRA is they, and just like the FDA, I mean, they're heavily funded by Big Pharma, 90% around that level. And I think that that's had an impact on them, because we've not seen what I regard as a regulatory issue. My colleagues and I in the UK, we have written several papers to them, letters to them, warning that all the yellow flags are out there. Why aren't they doing something? And one of the senior writer, and I was a co-signatory, said they just thanked him for his communication and reminded him that the MHRA were the best regulatory organization in the world, or something along those lines, and no details went into. I subsequently have found out the MHRA is seriously understaffed and that they have not addressed this issue. So they could actually say they don't have enough staff to deal with it. Well, they don't need to deal with it because everybody else has. You know, we have all said, you know, every doctor I've spoken to has seen significant side effects. Now, they could get away perhaps with the early vaccine program if they played it very well, but they won't. They cannot get away with the boosters. Now, when you say this is a vaccine you give to everybody, I right at the beginning said, no, you don't need to give this vaccine to somebody who's already infected, and we are surrounded by people infected. Whenever do you give a vaccine to somebody who's been infected? I tell you, as far as I can work out, I mean, the main one was rabies. You know, for the rabies, they gave, if you got bitten, you had a vaccine as quick as possible to boost the system up. If you've had a natural infection, you've got a perfect immune response, especially in young people, people who are fit. I was told, no, it was very dangerous and everybody needed as much immune protection as they could get. Well, it's turned out this is immune protection that destroys your natural innate T cell system, so it's totally unjustifiable. When they brought the boosters in, I went head-to-head on a television program here in the UK with some experts who said they got their booster and everybody must have it. I said, why would you not have, why would you want to have a booster if you've already got a good immune system and you've had two vaccines or you've been naturally infected? Why wouldn't you test? Because the vast majority of people will not need this booster. And my God, that's turned out to be correct. And in fact, it might do them more harm than good. And that's turned out to be even more correct. And you know what these experts told me? It's far too difficult to do a simple test that sees whether people would benefit from the booster. It's much easier to roll it out to everybody. Well, I said, I just totally dispute that, because I've recently been abroad and I ended up having to have more compulsory PCR tests than I ended up having hot meals on that trip. So it's clearly not a problem to test. You know, so this is the lunacy we were dealing with.
Yeah, it is lunacy as well, isn't it? Because I think, you know, putting tests aside, actually, there's one way you can discriminate whether people should have it or not, and that's based upon age and health. I mean, it's pretty clear, isn't it, the statistics mm-hmm. around this. If you're young, and when I say young, I mean under 60 years old, and you don't have any serious comorbidities, you are. It is very, very, very unlikely that anything untoward will happen from COVID. Now, Angus, one of the things that we've learned through several Freedom of Information requests is that the MHRA, number one, doesn't have a process for its staff to follow to investigate yellow card reports. So Nick Hunt, who's actually on the show this Thursday, very cleverly followed up with that and said, right, okay, well, can you tell us how many cases of potential deaths, so we say potential because these are self-reported, how many cases of these potential deaths have been investigated? And the MHRA came back with an exemption 12 report, which basically means that it would be too costly to investigate. What do you make of that?
I'll be honest, unbelievable. I mean, I really cannot believe in this day and age that they could do a reply like that and expect it to be taken seriously. I mean, it's a mission of incompetence, surely.
Well, it is, isn't it? Because a safety auditor, part of doing being a safety auditor and a regulator is you hold on to information, you have audit trails. And, you know, I think the answer they gave to that FOI suggests one of two things. Either they haven't investigated one yellow card report, or they don't have any internal systems for actually sort of saving the data and auditing it. Now, if they haven't got the systems for doing that, then how are they supposed to assess and do analysis to find out if there's a problem? So I think by all accounts, the MHRA has proved by its own answers to FOIs that it's not doing the job that it's supposed to. Now, Angus, a really big thing I know for you and for many, many of us is the vaccination of children, particularly under 18s. What are your thoughts on what's happened over the last year?
Well, I always said, and I've been involved with several of my colleagues, saying it's absolute madness to vaccinate children with what is still an experimental process. It hasn't even been properly approved. And I mean, I admit I went ballistic when I heard that they were even thinking about it. It was a respiratory virus. The number of kids that were affected by COVID were hardly any at all. And when they came up with trying to justify the kids, I mean, you'd have to be brain dead not to realize they were talking about vaccinating 2 million kids in order to prevent one of them going into hospital. It's total madness. And when the main reason children go into hospital is RSV. And so, you know, they shouldn't even have gone there. They still haven't got RSV sorted out properly. So they shouldn't even have gone there. And then I said, you know, they do not need it. They've got superb T cell systems at that age and all the way up to, I would say, your T cell response is pretty good up to 55 when it starts to deteriorate quite rapidly, which is incidentally the age from on which you get a whole range of horrible diseases like cancer as the T cell response goes. Now, what I couldn't believe is, and I have to make it very clear, that I've no bones about this at all. Our chief medical officer went on the air and he said two things which told me, one, he knows nothing about vaccination immunology, and two, he knows nothing about how to handle a respiratory vaccine program. He said two things. He said to everybody on the air, he said, we must vaccinate the children in order to protect their parents and grandparents. Well, at that point, he said, you don't vaccinate people to protect other people, because we knew by this time it did not stop infection whatsoever. And so if you then look at the rest of his statements, he basically admitted the vaccine doesn't work, because he was talking about people who'd had their two vaccines at that time, the grandparents and the parents. So he wanted children to be exposed to something that was potentially highly dangerous, just to protect people who had already been vaccinated. And if that was the case, he really wanted that. He was telling us the vaccine did not work whatsoever. And it was staggering. that he's still in post, to be quite
honest. Yeah. I really do hope that I think a lot of people are learning about this now, but unfortunately the mainstream media is still trying its best to ignore things. Now, Angus, I think you're an incredibly important voice on all of this, and I thank you for speaking out. What are you doing? We've got about a minute left. What are you doing at the moment in terms of work, and what plans have you got for 2023?
Oh, that's a very profound question. I mean, what I'm doing immediately this week, I've got meetings, and a very big meeting on the vaccine and why we must stop it and stop all future messenger RNA vaccines. It's going to be a big meeting in London with lots of like-minded people with a very, very big audience. So that's my focus, is to get rid of all COVID vaccines and anything with messenger RNA in it. That's it in the first time instance. But then the next year, I've been working with lots of vaccines over cancer, and one of them's come out, and I make no bones about it, I've got a really major interest in it, as one of the best going. It's called IMM-101. It's a heat-killed mycobacteria, so it couldn't be simpler. It's what all people are exposed to as they grow up. Primes the immune system, and so it's been perfect. We've shown that it boosts the response to any agent we use. We published in ASCO this year, if you give these checkpoints after this agent, that is twice as good with no side effects. So I'm completely committed.
That's brilliant, Angus. Sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there because we're running out of time, but thank you so much for joining me on the show, and I hope you'll come back and speak to us again soon.